Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 67. 67, Jen.
Seis siete.
Of the morning after.
Which is not how you say 67 in any language. Doesn't matter.
It's whatever you want it to be today. It's a beautiful spring day. I'm Jessie Kiefer.
And I'm Jen Tulloch, and it's so gorgeous out.
It is, and we have a pretty jam-packed show, which I'm excited about, which seems to be perfect for this season. In May, Jen and I are going to be at the second year of the Great Googa Mooga Festival in Park Slope. Incredibly Mooga. Excited about that. For anyone who's been living under a rock, it was this wonderful, gigantic food festival with music, so much wine in Prospect Park.
Yeah, beautiful.
Did you go last year? Did you make it?
I only saw photographs, I'm afraid. What was I doing last May? I think I was getting a haircut, but they...
It's always your excuse, isn't
it? It's always something to do with my hair.
She does actually have a gigantic mane of hair, so I can only imagine it takes months.
It is. No, I remember when you went last year, and several of my other food and wine-related friends went and did nothing but brag about how wonderful it was and how I should have gone for months. So this year, rest assured, my ass is grass.
No, yeah. It's going to be so fun. Last year, the former host of the show, Jason Colucci, and I put together a Karate Kid-inspired shower curtain mobile set. So basically, we had like a big pole with the faucet and a big shower curtain around that. And then we just took that around to all the different stations at Googa Mooga. So I can't wait to see what Jen and I come up with this year. So someone who we are definitely going to track down at Googa Mooga, Michael Cherno, the co-owner of the meatball shop. Are you there, Michael?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. So last time we interviewed you, Jason Colucci was interviewing you, and you were, I think, on the top of a mountain somewhere. So where are you now?
I'm essentially 10 miles away from where I was the last time, on the top of a mountain.
In an undisclosed location?
In New York.
Oh, it is in New York. Okay, so you are in the state.
I tend to try to skip town on Sundays with my wife and try to get upstate for a little R&R.
No, that's a great idea. If I didn't... Well, actually, I do kind of go on vacation every week. I go to Bushwick from the East Village.
Because it's such a long and arduous journey on the L train.
What were you saying, Michael?
This is the 67th episode, huh?
67. We're getting real old. Real old, real fast.
What are we doing when we hit 100?
Your number.
I can't even think that far ahead.
We're going to the meatball shop.
Yeah, I guess we're going to the meatball shop for episode 100, Michael. So now you guys are, you're three restaurants in. How's that feeling?
Wait, you guys...
Oh, no, we're losing you. Well, you are on the top of a mountain.
Wait, but can you... Hello?
I can't tell if we're losing you if you're speaking Danish.
I'm here. Wait, you're not losing me. I'm
Michael.
Okay, so you have three restaurants. You've got the one on Greenwich, you've got the one on Stanton, and you've got the one on Bedford. How does life feel with that many things to juggle?
We are professional jugglers.
Circus. Hello? You were in the circus world before you started the restaurant world, right?
Yeah, yes. Daniel was actually he was a trapeze artist, and I was a juggler.
That sounds very San Francisco of you.
Yes. But yeah, no, we're extremely excited to be growing and doing what we're doing. We we opened up on 9th Avenue about 8 weeks ago, and it's been an enormous success. The next big project for us is the Great Googa Mooga.
And were you guys were not there last year, right?
We were not there last year slinging balls, but we were definitely there partaking in the festivity.
Yeah, okay.
Without a doubt.
In slinging balls in other ways. So tell me, what is your food stand going to be like this year?
Our food stand is going to be the biggest and the best. We were planning on doing meatball eating competitions every 30 minutes.
I'm
but,
in.
But we got kiboshed.
Oh no! So, was it like eating meatballs as fast as you can, bawling balls?
Yes, just eating as many meatballs as you possibly can with air guitarists, because we were fascinated by the air guitar competition last year.
Did Anthony Bourdain take part in that?
No, Anthony wasn't really into
it.
He wasn't into it.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, we're wearing him down.
But no, you know, we are going to be there with a large team of people, really pushing out a bunch of meatballs. Really, really excited to be part of it this year. You know, it was a great experience last year, though the weather was hot, which kept everybody drinking.
Exactly.
So we hope to bring be able to bring enough meatballs to stop up the booze.
So I know last year there was a mass of people, which is great. There were so many people going to Googa Mooga, and some of the people's complaints were lines. Is there any kind of format that they're giving you or ideas to kind of combat that?
You know, I'm sure that there has been a bunch of information swapped back and forth via email. You know, unfortunately, dealing with lines is not something that we're unfamiliar with.
I was going to say.
We have our own little strategy. I'm not going to spill the beans on the air. But I will tell you that we are coming ready and prepared to serve to the masses.
As someone who is willing and enthusiastic about standing in line at the Lower East Side meatball shop at 3 a.m. on a Saturday night, I will tell anyone who has complaints to suck it up, because it's worth it.
Yeah, literally.
suck it up.
Suck on the...
don't.
Well, also, you know, I'm thinking, do you know how to deal with lines when it's not 4 a.m.?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, listen,
all right,
I
didn't know if it was different.
People line up for these balls all day long, ladies and gentlemen, and we're ready for it.
I feel like this series of puns is so well rehearsed. I feel like you guys could even do it in a commercial.
Oh, hey now.
Because,
look at you, fancy.
Oh yeah.
There's a Chase commercial.
There is a Chase commercial, and y'all look real sexy in it.
Yeah, I mean, they are definitely chasing balls as well.
I wanted to ask you quickly about that, because it is such a cool thing that you guys got to participate in. How long was that shoot?
Wow, that was a pretty incredible production. I mean, they literally closed down Bedford Avenue and Greenwich Avenue. It was a three-day shoot. They closed the West Village shop for a day and the Bedford Avenue shop for a day. And then we just had to do some, like, B-roll and audio stuff the third day. But, yeah, it was pretty incredible. Those guys were super pro and just awesome to work with, the production company.
It was so cool as a New Yorker and such a fan of your restaurants to see it, because I felt, you know, I think like a lot of people did that love the meatball shop, and there are many of us, obviously, we felt such ownership. You know, I was watching Modern Family and the commercial popped up and I was like, oh yeah, it's meatball shop. It was so cool. So congrats on that.
Oh, that's so awesome. Thank you. You know, we were a little bit nervous at first because we didn't know what to expect. But we really felt incredibly confident with the final product, and they played that commercial and still play that commercial so regularly. It's amazing. We're super grateful for those guys.
So Mike, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll definitely be coming to interview you at the Great Googa Mooga. It's May 17th
awesome.
Through the 19th. So we'll get in touch with you about that and hear more from you. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, guys. We're pumped for Googa Mooga. It's going to be an amazing experience.
We'll see you then.
So, I mean, not only do we have Mike Cherno from the Meatball Shop, but we have some awesome ladies in studio today. Tova Danovich, she is the founding editor of foodpolitik.com. Welcome to The Morning After.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And then Jess Hayden of heartandtable.com. You are a supper club lady.
I am.
And more than that.
Yeah, I'm a catering business that does supper clubs for fun.
She's a one-woman extravaganza.
It's
phenomenal.
I can't wait to hear from both of you. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Tova. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Maurice Narcisse, Sorry, by Yula on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
We're back here on The Morning After. Food Politic is an online journal devoted exclusively to food news, culture, and politics. Their goal is to provide a home for food politics online. Always free, always accessible. I took that off the Huffington Post. Tova Danovich is a published author or writer on the Huffington Post at this point with this website.
It's very exciting. It's been a great way to get more people to the website, which being fairly new, I think only 2 months old, is still really what we're working on. So
2 months old, I mean, obviously you did something before Food Politic, and yes. I know you have a blog called 86.
Yeah.
So was that kind of what moved you into Food Politic?
To some extent. I mean, blogging is, you know, a well-done tradition in the food world at this point. So that was definitely where I started out. I also did some internships and kind of editorial work, was thinking about going in that direction for a while. But it was really, there was just not enough kind of development of voices in it as I really wanted to do. So one of the goals for Food Politic has really been to bring in more voices to the discussion about food policy and issues. Because I think while you have a lot of great conversation going on, there could always be more people talking about it and more people knowing what the issues are. And the more people who you bring in to write about it who maybe aren't already published authors or think of themselves as even being writers but are farmers or have something going on, the more kinds of really great stories and perspectives you're going to get through that. So I really wanted to kind of open up the playing field a bit more.
So what types of stories are you having on Food Politic?
Oh, just everything, really. Kind of whatever people pitch to us at this point. I mean, I try and fill in the gaps where I can when there's something really important, and I have a few other editors who also work with me who are great with bringing in multimedia stories, or, you know, they have their own networks of people from all around the country. But we've had some great multimedia pieces. One of them, the first ones actually that we had, focused on kind of sustainable foods in Montana. We had people, one farmer talking about the Farm Bill, which was actually our first piece that was on the Huffington Post. A bunch of things about childhood obesity, since that's really important, agriculture, just kind of all over the place. Whatever people want to talk about in a smart, interesting way, we will put on our website, essentially.
One of the pieces that really jumped out to me is because something that Jen and I had talked about on the show was about Kyle Smith's op-ed piece in the Post. And then you wrote something called "We Are Servers, Not Servants."
Yes,
and that was.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Voicing, I'm sure, thousands, if not more, responses to that piece, which was just outrageous.
Yeah, what was the what was your feedback for your article?
Yeah, well, a friend of mine actually brought this issue to my attention with the Kyle Smith piece.
Can we talk about what that piece was, just for those who may not be familiar?
Oh, just wonderful piece of writing. He was basically talking about how servers were there to serve, so shut up and bring your food and stop discussing the menu.
He said, you're a servant, so serve.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I was working at Manhattan in the time when this happened, and that very same night, it was kind of one of those very frustrating Fridays in the restaurant industry. And I overheard some people kind of complaining about our coat check and how he was taking forever lugging their 9 coats up a very small flight
of stairs.
Their
fur pelts, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Even though it was April. But you can always wear fur, apparently. So it was really frustrating, and just all of these things were kind of coming to a head at once. And just really this, I had also finished reading that book, Behind the Kitchen Door, that just came out, which is excellent. And that just kind of sparked some outrage in you to really think that things can be better with the way the restaurant industry operates. And for me, it really came down to an issue of tipping. And I think the fact that we have, you know, servers, front of house, back of house, relying on tips from people really makes others think that you are their employee, because in essence you are.
Well, I think also the assumption there, specifically in his piece, is that there is no skill involved. Yeah. And if you want to take on a monster like the New York service industry, then you sure as hell better know what you're talking about, because the people that make up this industry and are the backbone of it and help it to function, or sort of the cogs in the machine, as it were, are incredibly skillful. And if you want to know about the bottle of wine you're drinking, then I'm who you're going to ask. And if you want to know about where the cheese came from, then I'm who you're going to ask. And that piece was so offensive. And so, I mean, I think obviously, you know, he had a concept of the kind of response he was going to get, which is why it was done.
Yeah.
But
I doubt he's ever been a server before.
Oh, of course not. Yeah. And that's, you know, I think that issue is so important, and that was one of the pieces of yours I read as well that I was so excited to talk to you about, because all of my friends, of course, so many of whom have served or are currently serving, were like, okay, well, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
What are we going to do? We're going to make a video. We're going to, you know, and of course, very few of those ideas came to fruition.
Just
but
kind of blew over it.
So what was your response?
Well, I wrote this piece and I put it on the Huffington Post, and that was my big response. But I mean, it is a really difficult issue to change. Like, we have these, the fast food workers, who are going on strike the other week. There are a lot of people trying to just kind of make things incrementally better, and a huge amount of opposition. Just talking about the kind of art of tipping in the United States and changing that with coworkers, their assumption was that it was just something that was never going to change. That's just how it is in the United States. One of the best parts, I think, of that Kyle Smith piece is when he's comparing the, you know, insidious, insipid American servers to those great ones in France who really, they know what they're doing. They leave you alone. They're also not working for tips, which is why you can give them 25 cents at the end of the meal and they're completely fine with it, because they're salaried. Doesn't really matter what you do. So it's just a huge difference in mindset on both sides of the equation that could really be shifted if we were to change things. But I think, as anyone knows who's trying to do anything with policy, it's impossible to get the littlest thing done sometimes. I'd really love to see someone open up a restaurant where they just outlaw tipping altogether. Because when you go to other countries where they don't tip, it seems expensive at first, but when you don't have that additional bit at the end, it kind of does make a difference. The transaction's just finished. You can all kind of go about your business in peace.
Because it's already factored into the price of your drink, of your exactly. of your food. And I mean, I think that so many restaurant owners out there don't have to worry about front of house staff, you know, overtime, and because it's all at minimum wage. So, yeah, we all do rely on that 20% tip.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Another story that I was really interested in, we did a Hurricane Sandy show right after the hurricane, and I loved reading about how Hurricane Sandy and oysters could actually help to clean New York waterways. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating thing. I mean, people have been talking a lot about what we can do to kind of build New York City up so this doesn't happen again, or at least doesn't happen again so badly.
Prepare for a superstorm.
Yeah, exactly, since it seems like everyone's saying it's going to happen again. So one of the very kind of easy propositions is we'll build up some barriers, you know, get some sandbags. That'll be the end of the day. But water, if it gets high enough, goes over those. So there's been talk of kind of alternative sources of that. And New York used to be a huge, huge center of oysters and other shellfish. And they cleaned out the waterways, which was great. People would eat oysters just all the time for, you know, 10
and
cents.
And not farmed
each.
Oysters, wild
yeah.
oysters.
Yeah, they just kind of grew everywhere. And with kind of pollution and more industry and overeating, they went away, which made things get more polluted. But an interesting thing that oysters do is they kind of shift out the water currents a little bit. So there has been some talk that were we to really try to regrow the oyster population, that could kind of stem or slow down at least some of the currents that wow. lead to these superstorms. Also, it seems like it would look really beautiful. I personally would much rather look out at a nice marsh with some oysters than some huge barriers going along the outside of Manhattan. So,
I mean, are there any, you know, are there organizations that are advocating for this, or is it sort of just in the think tank right now?
I think it was just in the think tank. I would have to be more involved with probably urban design than I am, which is almost not at all, to really know what's going on with that. I think it was just different people coming up with kind of alternative,
right.
more interesting ideas of something that we could do where this idea was even floated. But it seems to fit in so well with New York history and solves this double-edged sword problem of both pollution and, you know, storm control, which seems kind of like a no-brainer to me. I mean, once they're there, the upkeep is not a whole lot for them compared to a wall, which you have to always be, you know, checking for cracks. So.
Right.
So what is coming up next for foodpolitik.com?
Coming up next? I mean, just more pieces. We publish every single day, which is great. So it kind of just depends on how many people we get involved. So that's really been what I've been working on, is trying to get the word out to more people just to submit. Because eventually I think it would be great to have this be a full-time source of news, more or less, where we can be getting 4 or 5 pieces every day, because there's just so much to talk about. I have this huge list of an RSS feed with every single food blog that I can get my hands on, and every day I open another 30 tabs on my computer that never go away of things that I wish we could cover, and it's just a matter of finding the manpower, because I think right now at this particular moment in time, there is just so much to talk about in food to follow up on. And it's just a matter of finding the right people to do the job. So that's really what we're kind of looking at this point.
So it's foodpolitik.com.
Yes, P-O-L-I-T-I-C. Not to be confused with Marion Nestle's website, Food Politics, which is very slight difference.
Singular,
but
foodpolitik.com.
Yes, it's like the body politic, but of food instead.
So, awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for fighting the good fight.
Thank you.
I can't wait to hear more from foodpolitik.com. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Jess Hayden from hearthandtable.com. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Bone Density by Eula on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Density, how I worry, why?
know HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization? If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us in our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
And we are back here in the morning after in studio today. I'm very excited about this. A lovely woman I had the privilege of meeting a couple of months ago at a birthday party.
A birthday party?
A birthday party. We was over at the White Hotel.
That's right.
And we started talking, and I discovered that she's doing something that, truth be told, is my dream job. Jess Hayden Matthews, owner and head chef of Hearth and Table. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm so excited to be here.
So I met you because we have a dear mutual friend, yes. And Ben Garrett. Hi, Ben. And like I said, we were at this party and we started talking about the food industry, and you were telling me about what you do. And I was mesmerized because I feel like one of the angles of your many-tiered business. Uh-huh. Is such a lost art, that which is the supper club.
Yes.
So how did this start? How did you get started with this?
Well, about a year and a half ago, I was living in Umbria with my now husband. He was then my fiance, and he was going to school to get his master's in art crime. And I was like the real housewife.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Which is pretty unbelievable.
We were talking before the show. He did explain to me how to successfully steal some art.
Yeah. You shouldn't really tell people that. That.
We gotta fund this show somehow. Jeff.
So you're living in paradise, basically.
We're living in paradise. We are living in this small town called Amelia. It's had 2,000 people in it. We lived on a farm in a little bungalow with like chickens and olive groves, and it was paradise. It was a very inspiring and soothing place to be for 3 months. And so I didn't have anything to do. I was like the real housewife. I was a lady of leisure, like sit by the pool, you know, run, hang out with all the old men in town.
And the chickens.
And the chickens, of right. course, of course. And so that's fun for about, you know, a week.
Sure. And then you're like, oh, okay.
All right. So basically there was all these students that didn't really have places to eat. It was a really small town. They had 2 restaurants. And the best restaurant was where in the people's homes that lived there. So no one went out. So and everyone was on a budget. So I started to open up a little restaurant in our bungalow. We had a table for 12, and people would pay 15 euros for a 3-course meal, and it was BYOB. And literally, our farm table was just right in front of the bungalow, like on the olive grove, and they just became these amazing dinners and parties. And I think we left Italy having so many amazing friends from having this experience. And for me, it was kind of the tipping point to push me in the direction of starting my own catering company.
So you come back to the States, you're incredibly inspired and full of yeah. love and sun and wine and olive oil.
Yeah.
And
and
you
fat.
Say,
I was really fat.
Okay. You know what? I think that's everybody's story. My fiance lived in Florence, as I told you, yeah. for years, and she said, I was the happiest and the fattest I've ever been.
I felt amazing.
I'm sure it's just wonderful.
My skin was glowing.
I bet it was.
Yeah.
So you come back. Now, what were you doing professionally before that? Because you came from a very different background.
Yeah. I mean, I moved to Manhattan to work at a foundation. I got laid off, and then I started doing sales at Ralph Lauren, which paid the bills, but was not very inspiring for me. But I've always loved to cook. I went to art school. Cooking to me is a way of being creative, and it's also a very nurturing thing to do, which I love that connection you have when you share a meal with someone.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is a thing that I think, unfortunately, is often lost in our culture.
Definitely.
And, you know, I was raised in a loving family that was very close with one another, but I think about this so often now that I've been in the food industry for years. I wasn't raised in a communal eating environment.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, such an important part of the backbone of so many communities.
Yeah. I mean, my mom's from Latin America, so you don't come to dinner, you're in big trouble.
Right.
And so that was mandatory growing up. And I think it really formed who I am as a person now. I mean, I sit down with my husband every night and we eat together, and there's no distractions. It's a way of connecting, even if it's like over some toast and water, because that's sometimes what I had in my house.
What you have time to
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
I know that life.
But it's really important to me, and it's really the focal point and why I started my business.
So how has that business manifested now? You offer, so if one goes to your website,
yeah,
we see heart, hand, table, right? These are the three things we can click on.
Yeah,
which is why I called it heart, hand, table.
Which is just a fun play on words. You weren't wrong.
You weren't wrong. If you spell hearth and table, it's heart, hand, table. Right. I cook,
that makes sense.
You know, with my heart, through my hands, to your table. So that's the whole
premise. So I can either go to a supper club that's held literally in your home.
In my home.
In your home. So what could I expect from that night?
Amazing food. great drink. I work with amazing sommeliers and mixologists in New York City that come, and basically they create a cocktail based on the menu that I have for that month's supper club. And then you usually just meet really incredible people that most of the people that come to my home, I don't know them. And there's nothing like having someone leaving say, that was an amazing experience. Not the food was great. That was an amazing experience.
Yes. So this is okay. So if Jesse and I want to come,
sure.
How can we do that?
So basically, I'm primarily a catering website or a catering service, and but every month for me, it's a way to relax, to try out new recipes, and to market my company without having to really spend any money.
Right.
And so basically, you go to hearthandtable.com, and there's a tab that says Vincenzo's Supper Club. And it's named after the lovely man that owned our bungalow in Amelia. And it's $50, and you get two cocktails and food all night. And we heavily suggest that you bring some amazing wine or beverage to go with the meal that we're having. So
when's the next one?
That next one's pretty exciting, actually. I'm working with all these Brooklyn vendors, Finn and Phoebes.
Yes, friends of the show. Yeah, we love them. Best ice cream ever.
Kings County Beef Jerky.
Amazing.
Who's a great friend of mine. The New Clarendon Beer Company that's based out of Cobble Hill. And we're doing like a really big one on May 18th. And that's going to be $60. And it is going to be a great, great time.
Do you still have slots open?
I sure do. So, and this was actually a small digital company that's based out in Clinton Hill. The guy really loved my concept, so he's lending me his space. So it's going to be a great party. We're going to have a DJ, so please come on out.
I absolutely plan on it. I'm really like, I
ladies
have been planning
invited
on it since I met you many months ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so in addition to this amazing supper club you have, mm-hmm. You also do catering and food delivery. So how does that work? Can you come, cook my birthday party?
I would love to. Yeah. Basically, you just get in touch with me. I work with all different budgets and different food restrictions. And I love what I do. And I love the connection and these amazing people that I've met through cooking for them. So, I mean, I do events. I do weddings. And then my food delivery, I work with each client, customize their menus. I drop it off in the beginning of the week. They eat their amazing meals that are all in glass Tupperware that they can just throw in the oven. And then I pick up their cooler and their Tupperware at the end of the week, and then we start all over again. So it's been an amazing... My company has been around for a year and a half, so it's been a pretty incredible journey.
So cool.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jess.
I just want to know, like, is there a specific style to the food that you make? Or are you kind of across the board trying all things?
I'm not across the board. I'm pretty... I've lived in Italy. I've lived in Spain. I grew up going to Peru a lot. So I definitely do a lot of Mediterranean food. I'm really vegetable-driven, seasonal. And I always have to add a little Latin flair into it because, you know, it's just in my blood.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
What Latin flair? Like pisco sour? Sorry,
sure.
You said Peru.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite meal is ceviche. And so if I can ceviche anything, like lime juice is my one of my favorite ingredients. And I pretty much put it on everything.
Mm.
So that kind of flair to it. But I just like really... I like the ingredients to shine. It's not fussy food. It's pretty rustic. I want it to be really beautiful. but I want it to taste amazing. And it reminds you of something, you know.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I can't tell you how thrilled I am that we finally got you in studio.
I'm so excited to be here.
Tell us one more time where we can find out more about Hearth and Table.
Yeah, you can go to my website.
Don't worry, everybody
just run to her website and find all of the info.
Just go right there. You can go to hearthandtable.com, and you can also check me out on Facebook.
And Twitter. I got hip to that this morning. Amazing. Yeah. Well, Jess Hayden, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
it's been
you.
A pleasure,
I've
and I look
so
forward
fun.
To coming to one of those dinner parties.
Yeah. No, seriously,
very soon.
No, you guys
we'll, and we'll
to
like we'll live report. Or, well, we won't live report. I haven't figured out how to do that.
You just got me
those
so
two,
excited.
Who those two idiots in the corner with a microphone?
No, but we'll put together a piece from there. It'll be
I love
you know,
that. I think that would be great.
On site reporting. So. Speaking of our own supper club.
Uh-huh. Is it that time?
Well, no. We're going to take a break, but we got to tease it a little bit.
Okay.
It's going to be what's on the menu at Chardonnay's.
I mean, we can't keep the people waiting.
Well, yes, we can.
We can. For 2 minutes.
But just, yeah. So it's going to be what's on the menu at Chardonnay's when we come back.
All here right? on Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah.
.org.
Get ready for it.
You're listening to Hollow Cave by Yula on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Grammy Award-winning jingle.
From Sade.
From Sade slash Jenna Tare.
Like
Jenna Tare, who we gonna have in studio next week. Y'all get ready. So, you know, we like to try and vary it and mix it up with Chardonnays. And I was thinking a lot this week about the post-winter blues that so many of us can experience, at least I can, which is when I look at my closet and I think there's an entire side of this closet that I cannot fit into after the amount of beer and ice cream and pizza I consumed this season. So what am I going to do? I'm
going
to jog, I'm going to go to Pilates, whatever it is. But I was thinking about my wonderful, beautiful mother and all of my aunts and Midwestern dietary fads in the 90s, and I really wanted to do a Chardonnay's homage to 90s diets. So today on Chardonnay's, we are going to be featuring the post-winter blues diet light menu. So we're going to do a couple courses here. Starting off, we are going to do a de-thawed baked potato with low-fat cream cheese and a low-fat cheddar, topped with some chopped chives and low-fat ranch dressing.
Calories,
no cow. Following that, we are going to do an iceberg lettuce salad with low-fat ranch, croutons, and again, that low-fat cheddar. We've got it in bulk. Moving on to our main event, we are going to do a low-fat, low-cal stir-fry with frozen broccoli, water chestnut, and grilled chicken cubes. You can...
From a bag?
Absolutely, from
like a
bag.
Like
shake
a bag.
And bake. Okay. You can do... if you want to do a 90-cent upgrade, we will add de-thawed, previously frozen red and green peppers that we can throw into the wok. And for dinner, or for dessert, rather, we are going to end the night with something pretty sexy. We're going to do a Snackwell cookie crumble with sugar-free vanilla ice cream and a Slim Fast espresso martini at Chardonnay's.
Joe, give us a Chardonnay's. Joe, give us a Chardonnay.
Chardonnay's taking a nap. Doesn't
well,
matter.
I
the
mean,
point
it does,
is...
You know, it doesn't matter, but... What, I'm a... No. Thank you.
What's on the menu with Chardonnay? Snackwell cookie crumble.
So, I like that fade out. That was good. That was good stuff. So I'm gonna request to add to the baked potato some I can't believe it's not butter spray.
Oh, absolutely.
And then I actually really remember the Snackwell cookies when I was in college, which actually wasn't in the 90s. I was in the early thousands.
You know, I mean, speaking of food politics and speaking of food politics and food awareness. You know, I was talking to my beloved friend and temporary roommate, Frank Winters, playwright extraordinaire, about the evils of what were the sort of insidious but quiet evils of American food in the 90s. Obviously, everyone said, "Oh, stay away from fat, stay away from calories," and of course, no one was paying attention to high fructose corn syrup or sugar. Things that were replacing sugar substitutes, and any number of terrible chemicals and dyes, et cetera, and chemical derivatives that we were pumping through our veins all through the 90s. And he said, well, you know, I don't understand if you're eating diet food, you can get thinner. And I was like, you know, I remember in the 90s, so many of my neighbors and teachers and friends of my mom were eating Snackwell cookies and drinking Slim Fast. And the amount of toxins and disgusting chemical byproducts that were in those foods, quote unquote, was astounding. But, you know, it became this thing. And we were probably 11, 12 around there. And I remember thinking, okay, well, if you eat diet food in addition to the food you're already eating, then you'll lose weight. Because I thought that was scientifically how it worked.
It actually cuts the fat out. Yeah,
took me a couple of years to realize that was not, in fact, how it worked. Anyway.
And as a restaurant, being Chardonnays, we would love to support all of these bad diet trends.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. That's the name of the game.
This was a good one today.
I was happy with it.
I was pretty happy with it, too. I've had a vodka Campari orange juice soda.
That was a lot of combinations there.
I'm shaking a leg. I got to run to the Duplevese.
Speaking of that, then, we're gonna take off here.
We are going to take off. Oh, man, it's been lovely. I can't wait for the next one. This has been The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
Bye-bye.
We love you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter
at @heritage_radio.
You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today.
Thanks for listening.